You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 10th of January. The Utah Jazz get ready to head back out on the road before a Friday home game. We'll look at what's ahead for us before we chat again on Monday. Is there a trend going on in the NBA about how teams are playing lineups, and did the Jazz maybe know it beforehand? And it's a points gained Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it a lot more fun to be a Jazz fan, as well as keeping you engaged with the team at a higher level. Hopefully that's the case. Hope you're great. It's a Friday, 12 inches of powder at Alta. I have meetings all day. Oh, well. Missed on this one. I've missed on most of the powder days this year, but I had some nice days. The last few days, I snuck out for an hour or two each day with my dad, and so that was nice. I'm watching the NBA last night, and I'm noticing a trend that's taking place in the league. We've gone through the one trend where everyone's playing four out, then people are starting to play five out. During most of that time, people were all playing still with as long and big a guys as they could. You were just trying to find the Ryan Anderson at 6'10 who could play on the outside. Then this year I started talking to coaches around the league, and the comment that I got from a lot of them was, you really have got to be able, as much as you got to be able to shoot, you got to be able to dribble and pass. Okay? So now I'm watching the league, and I am seeing more and more for what I would think of as three guard lineups. Okay? So Boston last night had Kemba Walker, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown on the floor for long periods of time. I think those are, I would think of those as three guards. Jaylen Brown's pretty big. That's a pretty good size group. Philly's weird, right? Philly's hard to tell because what do you do with Ben Simmons? And they're just so big. So they're not the best of examples. But I'm watching the league. Oklahoma City is making famous the idea they're playing three point guards right now. So they're playing Dennis Schroeder, Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander together for extended periods of time with success. That's really three point guards. Gilgeous-Alexander's a developing point guard, but the other two, and Dennis Schroeder's almost more of a scoring guard. You start to run around the league, and on a nightly basis, I'm looking at rosters and lineups, and some of them are hard because it's in flux. Rick Carlisle in Dallas has always done it, right? Rick Carlisle has been willing to play Seth Curry, J.J. Barea, Jalen Brunson, whatever it might be. I mean, now he's actually huge, right? Because he's got Luka as a point guard, but he played DeLon Wright, Seth Curry, and I don't know if Jalen Brunson was ever on the floor at the same time the other night. I think when I looked at it, Jalen Brunson and DeLon Wright's minutes were kind of where the point guard went. So he never went to three the other night against Denver. But I'm watching the league, and it is feeling more and more as though this is an option. And I actually think the Jazz might have known this. This is the type of thing that our front office is ahead of the game on. I don't know this, by the way. I think there's sometimes people think I know more, and I don't. I have no idea. I'm truly guessing this. But when we acquired Jordan Clarkson, we've committed that a lot of our lineups this year are now going to be three guard lineups, and even at times three point guard lineups. And I think we might have known it. I'm just that there. It's not it, our front office is so detailed, puts in so much work that to me, it's beyond thinking that they would like be surprised. That they wouldn't. Does that make sense? And I think as you look at us, we have Donovan, we have Mike Conley, we have Jordan Clarkson, We have Emmanuel Mudiay. We have whatever you think Joe Ingles and Royce O'Neal are. And we suddenly have the capability to play three guards, or actually, moreover, we are going to need to play three guards. And I don't think that's a problem. And that, to me, is a really interesting next trend in this league. Boston tried to close last night with, like, just no center. That's different. This is still having a center, probably even having some sort of power forward. But I do feel like we're seeing this kind of approach by teams. How detailed? I don't know. I didn't do the research last night. I felt this for a little while. I've watched how often we're kind of matched up that way. So I'm not, you know, I don't have some overwhelming, incredible insight here that, you know, that I'm like hiding from you. This is a feeling. So, you know, keep an eye on it. Obviously you look at, you know, most three man lineups played and it's there in, across the league, which I looked at last night to try to see if I could find this. And you're digging, you know, those are all pretty traditional. So Bogdanovich, Gobert, and O'Neal have played the third most amount of minutes together. They're plus 12.7, which, by the way, if you're wondering, of the top 50 three-man groups in the NBA, the only one that's better is LeBron James, Danny Green, and Anthony Davis. They're at 12.9, and we're at 12.7. It's kind of exciting. Gobert, Bogdanovich, and Mitchell together is at 12.1. The only ones better than that are Will Barton, Nikola Jokic, and Jamal Murray. The one I mentioned of LeBron and Paul Millsap, Nikola Jokic, and Jamal Murray. And Paul Millsap, Gary Harris, and Jamal Murray. I dug in, looked a little deeper at other three-man groups. I don't have a data point to be able to reference here. Denver's top lineup is pretty fabulous. The best three-man lineup, which I did stumble upon in this, so this is how I got here, of the top 100 most used three-man lineups is Rudy Gobert, Royce O'Neal, and Donovan Mitchell. These are the things that get you pretty excited about the Utah Jazz. Like, I was texting back and forth with someone, well, they haven't beat any... Yeah, okay, I don't... You know, we haven't beat any above 500 teams recently other than the Clippers, the only one we've played. But our starters have been great, or our core guys have been great all year. The bench was an unmitigated disaster, and what we needed to do was to find a way to equalize on the bench so that we weren't a negative. Right now, the bench is positive, which is great. We didn't actually need that. Like, you go to the top 200 five-man lineups, minutes played. The number one group of the top... Of the top 200 five-man lineups is the Jazz at 16.0. You go to the top 400 five-man lineups and you get a Jazz lineup at 17.2. No, I mean, if we take only lineups that have played three-man lineup groups that have played, now this is a little bit like it's going to, you know, back up, but we take only three-man lineup groups that have played at least 400 minutes. The best one out there is Wes Matthews, Eric Bledsoe, Giannis Antetokounmpo. They've played 424 minutes. Then number two is Bogdanovich, Ingles, and O'Neal. Number three is Gobert, Ingles, and O'Neal. Number four is Gobert, O'Neal, and Mitchell. Number five is Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, and Kendrick Nunn, which is incredible. The next one is Harden, McLemore, and Tucker. Then we're back to Bogdanovich, Gobert, and Ingles. Then we're back to combinations of Antetokounmpo and Lopez. Then we get to Toronto, and then we get to a litany of Denvers before we get another Bogdanovich, O'Neal, and Mitchell. Okay, it's all kind of interplayed, right? But if you're going with three-man lineups and you look at the best in the league, it's Utah, Denver, Milwaukee with a little sampling of Toronto and a little sampling of Houston. That's pretty exciting for us. And the top 10... And obviously, again, this all builds into it. You know, you go to four-man lineups, we can do the same thing. You don't want to do 400 minutes because it's too many minutes, and you start to find the same thing. That's not where I started the research. The research I started was based on the three guards. And then what I stumbled upon was that our three-man lineups are as good as any in the NBA, which means as of this time, and that's over the course of the season. That's not just recently. That includes all 33 games that have been played together. If you want to stretch in the four-man lineups, you kind of have to go to 200 minutes, by the way, at 400, because obviously you just don't have a big enough sample size. You get about 366 people. The best four-man lineup, you got it. Gobert, Ingles, O'Neal, and Mitchell. Followed by Houston, followed by Utah, followed by Utah, followed by Houston, followed by Milwaukee, followed by Utah, including Mike Conley. And then a Laker lineup. And then a bunch more Utah lineups. So we're there. We're at the top of the heap with the best lineups in the game right now. And the question was whether we could rectify our bench. We've done it. Pretty exciting. Let's look at the games we got coming up here as we continue. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I will admit, I spent a good deal of last night looking at the Palisade, because I'm trading in my Chevy Blazer, which I've loved, for the Hyundai Palisade today. And I will get to tell you all about it. I watched the car gurus, home run for Hyundai. I watched there's a guy, I don't even know who he is, Doug Marrero, does a whole preview. It's beautiful. Super excited to get this. The Murdoch Hyundai, located 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. And they have just done Hyundai's done an incredible job. Their technology breakthroughs, whether it's the back door, safety that won't open if a car's coming, so your kids can't open the door into traffic, all of the cruise control and other items and automatic braking and things of that nature. My dad was driving the Hyundai Santa Fe that we own and calls me. He's like, I got a notification that the automatic braking did. I was like, emergency braking? I was like, oh, that's just that the cameras are covered up with snow right now, so it won't stop automatically for you. He's like, oh, I thought the braking, no, it's fine. You're perfectly fine. It just won't stop automatically for you if you screw up because it can't see right now because you're driving in a blizzard. It's great. We love it. We have the Hyundai Santa Fe we got for the family. It's been absolutely fabulous. Stop by and find out also about what the Murdoch experience is. Give me an email at dlock09@gmail.com and let me know if you're going to stop by and visit any of the Murdoch Hyundais, and we'll email out in front of you, find out which salesperson for you to deal with, and find out who you should talk to there. Make sure you get the great best treatment you possibly can as a Locked On Jazz member. So email me at dlock09@gmail.com. Put Hyundai on your list. You'll find out you get more bells, more whistles, and get a fabulous car all for it at Murdoch Hyundai. All right, Hornets Wizards coming up. The Hornets, I'm excited to see P.J. Washington. We didn't get to see P.J. Washington in beforehand. P.J. Washington's having one of the better years. He's a 21-year-old out of Louisville, Kentucky. Went to University of Kentucky. I always love those kids that are living in one state and then go to another. Or, you know, living in one rivalry center and then go to another. He actually kind of bounced around. He grew up in Louisville. He grew up in Dallas, and he went to Finley Prep in Nevada. So he's 6'8", 230, 12th pick of the draft, and he's stroking it. He's shooting 40% from three. He's really had a pretty good opening year so far. So it's, you know, worth keeping an eye on from a rookie standpoint. He was a 2017 McDonald's All-American. He's a little old. He's 21 years old for a kid who played just 2 years in college because of the Finley Prep time and all that. But he's turned out to be one of the better rookies. This is a weird rookie class. I don't know if you've looked at it, and I don't know why you should have looked at it, because we didn't have a pick. But if you actually look at this year's rookie class, obviously Zion hasn't quite happened yet. Ja Morant is incredible. His numbers are just stunning, and they're winning. They've won, like, huge amount of games against above 500 teams. And then it gets into a real struggle. R.J. Barrett shooting 39% and 31% from three. DeAndre Hunter shooting 40% and 34. Darius Garland is shooting 40%, 37 from three, which is good. And, you know, remember, rookies, Kevin Durant shot 40%, LeBron shot 40%. Like, 40% as a rookie is not a death nail. But the sub-40% is a little unnerving. Jarrett Culver's at 38. Kobe White, the seventh pick, is at 37. Jackson Hayes has been all right. We'll see Rui Hachimura, who's playing a ton for Washington out of Gonzaga, the Japanese player, who he's shooting 48%, but just 21% from three. Cam Reddish in Atlanta is shooting 31% and 26%. Cameron Johnson, who was panned as a pick by Phoenix in that trade and everyone kind of criticized, is actually having a good year at the 11th pick, 42% from the field, but 39% from three. And then The 12th, this is my point, so 11's been all right. 12th, P.J. Washington's been really good. 13th, Tyler Hero's been really, really good. So an interesting little stretch here where 12, 13, and 14 are really good. And what's interesting is after that, almost nobody's played. So Romeo Langford at 14's played 92 minutes. Seiko, who's getting time now in Detroit, has played 177 minutes. Auburn's 16th pick is, or the 16th pick out of Auburn is by Orlando's hurt. Nickel Alexander Walker's played 376 minutes. Goga's played 278 minutes. Luka Samich has not played yet. Thibault and Brandon Clark have been really good. So it's the best, obviously, Ja Morant is amazing. And then, and Jackson Hayes has shown all the signs that New Orleans wants. But then you get to 12, 13, and 11, 12, 13 as kind of the next set of best players in the draft. And then probably 20 and 21. And Grant Williams is 22. So it's pretty interesting to see how this draft is playing out so far this year. Jordan Poole's been thrown into the deep end. I'm not sure I'm going to evaluate him yet. And some decent minutes coming out of second round draft pick Cody Martin, who we'll see out of Charlotte this year. Sorry, that was just an aside. I wasn't really planning to go there. But it is at least interesting. Devontae Graham, who's kind of the feel-good story, second-round draft pick a year ago, like all of a sudden taking, well, now all of a sudden the last 10 games, he's shooting 32% and 33% from three. This league is brutal. This league is just brutal. Like, you start getting hot, they start studying you, they put out a scouting report on you, and then all of a sudden you shoot 32% from the field and 33% from three. I mean, that is exactly what has happened here, is that this kid is great, like, but he's almost entirely off the bounce. He's not a catch and shoot. Teams know it. He's not getting to the rim a great deal, and they've just changed their defense on him, and it's causing him, you know, issues. Whereas Terry Rozier, who has some weaknesses, still has enough game that with the scouting reports on him, he's still averaging 24 points a game his last 10 to pick up the slack there, so keep an eye on that. Mikal Bridges seems to be coming into his own. They have not defended well at all this year, which is interesting. I'm a little surprised by that. With James Borrega as their head coach, but they're 29th in the league defending the shot, and we're the third best shooting team and the number one three-point shooting team in the league. So we should be able to get some looks. This is the first game of their road trip before they kind of continue all in around. They go to Phoenix, and then they go to Portland on a back-to-back, which is kind of brutal, and they head out. They're trying to, at 15 and 25, trying to stay in the playoff race, but it doesn't feel like it. Obviously, the Kemba loss, they started just kind of had a surprisingly good start to the season that I don't think they anticipated having. And so I think they got a little maybe overly excited a little bit on their end of things. Cody Zeller's a pretty nice player. If you're a basketball junkie and want to watch him, he just does the right thing all of the time and makes plays and is a good, pretty good plus minus player for them. Over the years, whenever he's kind of left and gotten injured, they've really struggled, which has always been an interesting one to watch. Their defense, as I mentioned, has struggled. They have the 29th in the league in defensive shot quality allowed. They're 27th in the league at allowing you to shoot at the rim and 25th in the league at allowing you to shoot threes. So that's shot location tonight. The Jazz should not get caught in the floater game. Charlotte forces the second fewest floaters in the league, the second fewest mid-range shots in the league. So the Jazz should not get caught into that. They allow 10% of their opponent's shots to be corner threes, which would be an area where I think the Jazz should be able to profit a little bit as well. So kind of keep an eye on those things tonight. We then play Washington. Washington's another one who's not done a lot of defending. They're last in the league in shot defense. They're actually pretty good in shot quality. They're playing at an electrifying pace of play, but they're not a particularly good defensive team. That's an early game, though. I think that one will be funky to make sure we get rolling. They are 30th in the league defensively, playing 7th in the league offensively. They're just outscoring people. I don't know if, you know, I hate that phrase. They're just trying to outscore you. Well, everyone's trying to outscore everyone. They're pretty good offensively, though. So if we're, you know, a step slow and not ready to go, we could get caught a little bit there. They've been playing terrifically recently. If you look at Washington, they beat Boston, they beat Denver, they beat Miami. They did lose to Orlando badly. They lost to Portland and Orlando and the Knicks and Detroit in the midst of that. So it's been a little bit of a kind of, and some of it has to do with whether or not they play defense. So they had a terrific defensive game against Boston, who's scuffling right now. And they've had some big time off, and they had an incredible offensive game against Denver. Their Denver and Miami offensive games, you're just not beating them. Like, they go shoot 60% effective field goal percentage, get out. They had 39%. They shot, this is incredible, against Denver, they shot 60% effective field goal percentage and grabbed 39% of their misses for offensive rebounds. And they've done that a few times this year. This team, that's going to be the challenge against Washington. They are an offensive rebounding juggernaut. They had 40% of their misses as offensive rebounds against the Knicks, 39% against Portland, and 39% against Denver. So that will be a huge part of it. As well, they don't turn it over, so they get it up, they shoot, they crash the boards, they're stealing possessions from you, and you got to keep an eye. And then defensively, they'll foul a lot and push them. If you can push them, you're gonna be all right. So that's the matchups for the weekend. Then we play Brooklyn on, I think, Tuesday. So I'll have a show or two for you between now and then. Today's show is brought to you in part by Sarah and the crew at Sun Print Solutions. Sun Print Solutions is a really neat company. Sarah and her partner, business partner, opened it up and. About eight years ago, it was about to kind of close down, and they said, you know what, we can do this. And now they're doing amazing things. And what was so cool when I was talking to Sarah about Sunprint Solutions is how they could actually help their ability to do things. They could help Intercap Lending, one of our sponsors, because they have the ability and they have the qualifications to do legal documents. They could help Murdoch with any of their sales deals. They have done things for people like the Utah Jazz. I don't know what they couldn't tell me, but they've done, that's been a client. Zions Bank has been a client of theirs, as well. The store could be a client of theirs with their various mailings. They can make vendor things for you. So if you need any type of direct mail, packaging, digital printing, offset printing, this is Utah's most trusted and professional printing company around. It's Sarah and the crew at Sun Print Solutions. Make sure you give, Sarah a call. Sarah at Sun PrintSolutions.com is the email. Feel free to just send her a note, tell her that you're coming from us, and she'll take care of you. Sarah at SunPrintSolutions.com. All right, let's do a little, you know, we like to call it points gained Friday. Can't wait to see our last 10 games. Should we just start there? Should we just start it? I have two things I really want to do. I want to do our last 10 games, see how hot we are. And then I want to do the Oklahoma City trades. Watching that game last night, I got it. Like, the Clippers had to go get Paul George. They're not getting Kawhi Leonard. But I was wondering, like, are you a better team with Danilo Gallinari and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or are you a better team with Paul George? Like, that's not a criticism of Paul George. That's just a compliment to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari. And right now, there's no question you're a better team with Chris Paul than you are with Russell Westbrook. There was a really telling moment in that blowout last night where Russell Westbrook comes up floor in a transition three, pulls up short front rim, rebound comes back the other way. Chris Paul just buries the three. It was like kind of the backbreaking play of the night. Oklahoma City's good. I think Houston played the night before, by the way, too, if I recall correctly. So, you know, they were probably a little gassed and they had the advantage of that. Houston beat Atlanta on the road 122-115 in Atlanta, Oklahoma City, back to back. And they blasted them early 37-21 with all the emotion that was going on. So that game was over pretty quickly. But Chris Paul has just been, you know, crazy good recently. 18 points last night, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, just continues. Russell was good last night, 14 of 26. He did have his 7 turnovers. But James is struggling. Houston's interesting. Every time you look at the box score in Houston, you're like, ah, that's not quite right. And then you look up and they're like 25-12. It's like, oh, shoot. Like, boy, if they ever click in and get it rolling, it'll be interesting to see what happens. All right, let's look at let's do the top 10 first. Does that sound all right? Everybody good with that? Let's kind of, we'll do it backwards today. All right, so I always load in on the last 10 games. What I always do is I load in the data and then I don't look. The number one player in the NBA over the last 10 games is James Harden. So much for my concept that he's struggling. I just said that. James is struggling a little bit. Yeah, I guess not. Last 10 games, he's got a 4.9 points game. DeMar DeRozan is number 2 at 4.1. Wow. Did not know. I love this. Did not know that. DeRozan is shooting an absurd 61% from the field over the last 10 games. San Antonio continues to win and stay in the playoff race. Nikola Jokic is number 3 in the league over the last 10 games at 4.1. If you're new to this, Points gained is my system I use for offensive metrics. The concept is players' points that they would score on a given night more than an average or collection of average offensive players with their scoring opportunities. So in the case of Nikola Jokic over the last 10 games, he's getting about 18.6 scoring opportunities a night, and he's scoring 4.1 points more than what average players would do. Over the course of a season, we usually have one player at 4, and then we have two players that are over 3, and we have about 10 or 11 players that are over 2. Is the way to think about that. And then if you're in the really big thesis of our of this system, our me, is that negative players are far more detrimental than the league realizes. That's the, if there's a money ball aspect to this, it's that negative players are far more are hurtful than you might assume. And the other thing is that's happening this year so far, and I've talked to some people about it, is that fringe type players or unique niche players, probably a better way to say it, so dunkers and three-point shooters seem to have more value. The comment I got from some people who know the game better than I do in that is that since everyone is trying to deny the dunk or deny the three, it takes the really special ones to be able to get the dunk or get the three. And so that if you're able to be good at it while everyone's denying it, there's not very many of you. And yes, you are more valuable than you would be otherwise. Okay? So interesting little take there, left over from last week. I mean, that's what a lot of times I get the numbers and I go talk to the people that are way smarter than I am. James Harden, 4.9. DeMar DeRozan, 4.1. Nikola Jokic. Kevin Love. Interestingly, for all the dramas, I was playing well, 3.7. Jaylen Brown, 3.4. Jaylen Brown is having a much better year than Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown's going to line 12% of his possessions last time. Clint Capella, 3.2. Jonas Valanciunas, 3.1. Part of the reason why Memphis is much better than people realize. Devin Booker, 2.9. Anthony Davis, 2.8. Joe Ingles, 2.8. Rashawn Holmes in Sacramento, 2.7. D'Angelo Russell, efficient over the last 10 games at 2.6. J.J. Redick at 2.6. Mitchell Robinson, 2.6. Dante Exum, after his blow-up game, is in here, but he then is missing the next like two or three games with an illness. Trae Young, who's not always that efficient, incredibly efficient right now at 2.6. Michael Porter for Denver, part of the reason they're so hot. Bam Adebayo, LaMarcus Aldridge. Wow, San Antonio's two inefficient players are both efficient. Jaren Jackson, Rudy Gobert. Excuse me, these are all the players over two. Dame Lillard, George Hill, Joel Embiid, Dwight Howard, and Duncan Robinson. All right, let's see who's cold, who's frigid. Coldest player in the league right now is, well, Malcolm Brogdon played just three games, is Garrett Temple in Brooklyn. Marcus Smart is minus 3.8. Andrew Wiggins, minus 3.8. Torian Prince in Brooklyn, minus 3.3. Brad Beal's played just four games recently. Kai Bowman in Golden State's minus 3.1. Russell Westbrook, minus 3.1. Aaron Gordon, minus 3.0. Fred VanVleet's cooled off at minus 2.9. Then RJ Barrett, not a big surprise, minus 2.9. Devontae Graham, we'll see tonight, minus 2.8. Cam Reddish, back to the rookies we talked about, minus 2.7. Josh Okogie, Spencer Dinwiddie, Vince Carter, these are all minus twos or more. Elfrid Payton, Dennis Smith in New York, hasn't played much. Isaiah Thomas in Washington, Thad Young, Malik Monk, who we see tonight, Justice Winslow, who has played just one game. And Bogdan Bogdanovich in Sacramento, struggling, didn't know that. Jarrett Culver, we mentioned earlier, Devontae Burton, Yogi Ferrell, Markel Fultz. Wrap up the minus. Buddy Hield's right there, too. Andrew Holiday, so two players you think of. All right, that is the last 10 games. Let's go just scan Utah for the fun of it. Well, for the fun of it, because we care. Your last 10 games for the Utah Jazz, Joe Ingles is 2.8. Rudy Gobert's 2.2. George Niang, 1.4. Donovan Mitchell, 1.3. It's a big step for Donovan. He has not been a positive offensive player much. Last 10 games he is. Super to see. Jordan Clark, and that's actually without shooting the three great. That's pretty cool. 49% from the field, 36% from three. Very sustainable. 8.2% of his possessions are free throws. You'd like him to get the line more. Jordan Clarkson, 1.2. 42% of his shots are threes, which is nice. Royce O'Neal, 0.8. Tony Bradley, 0.6. Emmanuel Moody, 8.6. Bojan Bogdanovic, 0.4. This is it. This is like my whole model. Everything I believe in passionately. Everybody's positive. Everybody who plays is positive. So if you get the ball out of Donovan's hands, we're still getting a positive possession. And then when Donovan and Joe or Rudy get a positive possession, we're killing you. This is it. That's how you build a number one offensive team. This is everything I believe in at the nth degree. This is so beautiful. The championship caliber teams don't have a negative offensive player. They're too detrimental. So cool to see that. And we're the number one offensive team in the league in the last 10 games. I mean, it's somewhat intuitively obvious, but it's just the sense that you, if you can keep all your players to being positive, and what great strides by Emmanuel Mudiay to be 0.6. And, you know, Bojan Bogdanović has not been great, 41%, 29% from three, but if you go to the free throw line 14% of the times and you have good shot distribution, you can still stay above league average. It's kind of cool. All right, quickly, let's just look at the season and the league and the players. And the best in the league, and just that for those of you who might be new to this. James Harden is at 4.8, which is historically high. Karl Anthony Towns has only played 23 games at 3.9. Devin Booker is now 2.8. Second most positively impactful offensive player who's played games, or Cat is. Giannis is 2.7. But worth noting that Giannis is 2.7. James is 2.1 better than Giannis. Rudy's 2.5. Rashawn Holmes is 2.5. There you see the dunkers. Luka Doncic is 2.5. Rookie Brandon Clark is 2.3. Mitchell Robinson, 2.2. A dunker. Boy, did he have nothing against Rudy. J.J. Redick, 2.1. Anthony Davis, 2.1. Mo Wagner in Washington hasn't played much recently, 2.1. Dame Lillard, 2.1. Duncan Robinson, there's your elite three-point shooter. George Hill, 2.0. Davis Bertans, another just pure three-point shooter, 2.0. And Hassan Whiteside, 2.0. Those are the players above 2.0, and you see it, the dunkers, the unique players, and then the stars. The non-niche players in that group, Harden, Towns, Booker, Adetokounmpo, Luka Doncic. I don't know if J.J. Redick's just awesome or if he's a niche player. Anthony Davis, Dame Lillard. Maybe George Hill. It's really been terrific. The negative offensive players in the league: Jordan Poole, minus 3.2. Justice Winslow, minus 3. He's only played 11 games. R.J. Barrett, minus 2.9. Blake Griffin, minus 2.7. Frankly, Detroit will get better without him. Russell Westbrook, minus 2.6. Cam Reddish, minus 2.6. Eric Gordon is back. He's minus 2.0, or somewhat back. He's minus 2.5. Jarrett Culver, minus 2.5. Dennis Smith, minus 2.2. Kobe White, minus 1.9. Aaron Gordon, minus 1.9. Alfred Payton, minus 1.9. Drew Holiday, really struggling this year, minus 1.7, didn't play against us. Kristaps Porzingis, minus 1.6, and Torian Prince as well. Interesting. And finally, for your Utah Jazz, I'm so excited about the no negative players. Rudy Gobert, 2.5. Bojan Bogdanović, 1.3. George Niang, 0.7. George Niang from Jeff Green's a positive 1.2 difference. Royce O'Neal, 0.7. Joe Ingles, 0.6. Tony Bradley, 0.5. Jordan Clarkson, 0.5. Donovan, 0.1. Emmanuel Mudiay, now even. Yeah! Everybody's above average! Woohoo! We're awesome! On that note, have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. This has been Locked On Jazz Friday edition of Locked On NBA with Anthony and Adams. Always a great deal of fun. So tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA.